Okay, let's dive into this fascinating world beneath the green surface, all based on what Dr. Hoffman laid out for us on plant resource mechanics. I mean, that opening example he gave, the rock-mimicking cactus, just wild.
Oh, absolutely. What a way to start. Dr. Hoffman introduced us to this this master of survival. You've got a desert cactus, right? And its whole shoot system, the part that should be above ground looking for light, it's actually buried.
Buried? How does it even photosynthesize?
No, it has these tiny translucent tips, almost like little windows underground. They channel light down to the rest of the tissue below. It's an incredibly extreme adaptation. Really shows you the lengths plants go to for resources.
That really sets the scene perfectly for what we want to do today. We're aiming to give you that shortcut, that deep understanding of how vascular plants work, you know, how they handle energy, move materials around, basically how they stay alive.
And Dr. Hoffman broke down the resources into two main types. You've got the non-material, that's light, and then the material stuff. Water, CO2, and those minerals dissolved in the water.
Right. So to get how things flow, we need to start with the engine room, the chemistry.
Exactly. Photosynthesis. The summary Dr. Hoffman gave is pretty neat. Light energy plus 6 carbon dioxide molecules and 6 water molecules gives you 1 sugar molecule, C6H12O6, and 6 oxygen molecules.
And the key takeaway there, he stressed, is the CO2. That's the whole point, right? For carbon fixation.
Precisely. Taking that inorganic carbon from the air and building the plant's actual body, its organic skeleton.
And the oxygen.
From the plant's perspective, it's just waste, something to get rid of.
But nature loves balance, doesn't it? Because there's that mirror process, cellular respiration.
Right. It takes the sugar fuel and that waste oxygen, flips the reaction, and you get CO2, water, and crucially, energy the cell can actually use, ATP.
So this sets up a sort of division of labor in the plant.
A very clear one. Dr. Hoffman called it a functional split. Above ground, in the leaves, mostly photosynthesis. So CO2 comes in, O2 goes out.
And below ground, the roots.
They're busy respiring, they need oxygen in to break down sugars for energy, and they release CO2 out. Just like our cells, really. They're mining for resources down there.
Okay, so the plant gets the stuff it needs, now it has to move it. Dr. Hoffman talked about 2 transport systems.
Yeah, 2 pipelines. First, the xylem. This handles water and all the dissolved minerals, the solutes. Think of it as a one-way street, always moving up from the roots, through the stem, and eventually exiting the leaves. This whole process is driven by transpiration.
Transpiration. And that's water evaporating from the leaves.
Exactly. That evaporation pulls the water column up.
And the second system.
That's the phloem. This one moves the sugar, the food produced during photosynthesis, and its flow is fundamentally different. It's bidirectional, reversible.
Reversible. How so?
Well, sugar moves from where it's made the source, usually leaves, to where it's needed, the sink. That could be roots, fruits, growing tips. But, say, in early spring, the roots might act as the source, sending stored sugar up to new buds. So the direction depends on the plant's needs at the time.
Makes sense. Before we get deeper into the plumbing, let's touch on light again. Maximizing that is key. Dr. Hoffman mentioned phyllotaxy.
Ah, yes, phyllotaxy. It sounds complex, but it's just the arrangement of leaves on a stem, often in a spiral. And it's not random decoration. It's a highly optimized pattern, usually following mathematical rules, to make sure each leaf gets as much sun as possible without shading the ones below it too much. Really clever engineering.
Incredible. Okay, now let's zoom right into the tissue level. How does stuff move around inside the plant body? Dr. Hoffman talked about plasmodesmata.
Yes, these tiny tunnels are crucial. They connect the cytoplasm of adjacent plant cells, making the plant tissue, in a way, one giant interconnected entity.
So because of those connections, we can think of the plant having 2 main internal compartments.
That's right. Dr. Hoffman defined them clearly. First, the symplast. This is essentially all the connected cytoplasm. Imagine it as a continuous internal network within the cells.
Okay, the inside lane. And the other one?
The apoplast. This is everything outside the cell membrane. So the cell walls themselves and all the little spaces between the cells. The extracellular space.
Got it. Simpled onside, apoplast outside.
Mm.
So if you're a tiny particle, say a water molecule or a mineral ion, how do you actually get around? Dr. Hoffman said 3 routes.
3 basic options, yeah. First, the purely symplastic route. The particle stays entirely within the cytoplasm, moving from cell to cell through those plasmodesmata tunnels, never crosses a membrane.
Okay, stays inside.
Second, the apoplastic route. The particle travels completely outside the cells, just moving through the network of cell walls and the spaces between them. Again, no membrane crossing required.
Stays outside.
Huh?
So the third must involve crossing.
Exactly, the transmembrane route. trans meaning across. Here, the particle has to cross a cell membrane at least once. It might move along the apoplast for a bit, then cross into the symplast, maybe cross back out again.
And that's where membrane transport becomes critical, right? How things actually get across that barrier.
Absolutely. Dr. Hoffman categorized how things cross membranes. There's vesicular transport, like engulfing things, sort of cheating the membrane.
Endocytosis, exocytosis.
Then there's passive transport or diffusion. This relies on a concentration gradient. Things move from high concentration to low automatically if they can cross the membrane.
Which usually means small, nonpolar things slip through the lipid bilayer easily.
Right. Anything else, ions, larger polar molecules like sugar, needs help. They need a protein channel or a carrier protein. That's called facilitated diffusion. Still passive, still driven by the gradient, just needs a helper protein.
But what if the plant needs to move something against the gradient, like pulling in a nutrient that's already more concentrated inside the cell than outside in the soil?
Ah, now you need energy. That's active transport. And this was a major point in Dr. Hoffman's lecture. The key player here isn't directly moving the nutrient itself. It's the proton pump.
Okay, wait. The proton pump, H plus pump, it uses ATP energy. But just to pump protons out of the cell, why not use ATP to pump the nutrient directly? That seems roundabout.
It does seem roundabout at first glance, but it's actually incredibly efficient and versatile. By pumping protons, H plus ions, out, the cell creates a very strong electrochemical gradient. Lots of H plus outside, fewer inside. Think of it like charging a battery or pumping water uphill into a reservoir. You're storing potential energy in that gradient.
Okay, so it builds up this proton gradient.
Yeah.
Then what?
Then it taps into that stored energy for secondary active transport. An H plus ion wants to flow back into the cell down its steep gradient. That's a release of energy. And the cell uses a special protein called a cotransporter. As the H plus flows back in through this cotransporter, the energy released is used to simultaneously drag another molecule like sucrose or maybe a nitrate ion into the cell against its own gradient.
Wow. So the proton pump sets up the power source, and the cotransporters use that power to import specific things the plant needs, like using the flow of water from the reservoir to turn a mill wheel.
That's a great analogy. It couples the downhill flow of H plus to the uphill movement of something else. It's the central energy conversion mechanism for so much of plant transport.
And this ties into water movement too, right? Osmosis?
Directly. Osmosis is just the diffusion of water across a membrane, moving down its own water concentration gradient. And the environment's effect on this is called tonicity.
Dr. Hoffman emphasized that for plants, the ideal situation is actually a hypotonic environment.
Yes, meaning the solution outside the cell has less solute and therefore more water than the inside. So water naturally rushes into the plant cell.
But unlike animal cells, plant cells don't burst.
Nope, because they have that strong cell wall. Water pushes the cell membrane against the wall, creating internal pressure. That's turgor.
Turgor pressure. Mm. And that's what keeps non-woody plants standing upright, like millions of tiny water balloons pushing against each other.
Exactly. Dr. Hoffman memorably called it an osmotic erection. Lose that turgor pressure if the plant can't get enough water and the whole thing wilts. It provides essential structural support.
Okay, so we have the energy system, the proton pump. How does the plant use this power to actually grab nutrients, the material resources, from the soil? Mm. Especially the positive ions.
Right, the cations like potassium K+, calcium K++. The challenge, as Dr. Hoffman explained, is that these positive ions are often stuck, like magnetically, to negatively charged clay particles in the soil.
So the plant needs to pry them off.
Pretty much. Oh, it uses a neat bit of chemistry called cation exchange. Remember how roots respire and release CO2?
Yeah, CO2 out.
That CO2 dissolves in the soil water, forming carbonic acid, which then releases H plus ions, protons, and bicarbonate. The plant actively pumps more H plus ions out using its proton pumps. These protons essentially knock the desired mineral cations, like K plus, off the soil particles, freeing them up so the root can absorb them.
So the plant acidifies its immediate surroundings to release its food.
Clever. Very. But the absolute biggest nutrient hurdle, Dr. Hoffman highlighted, is nitrogen. N2 gas makes up most of our air, but it has this incredibly strong triple bond. Plants can't break it. They can't use atmospheric nitrogen directly.
So where do they get it?
They are completely reliant on bacteria. Nitrogen-fixing bacteria have the special enzymes needed to convert N2 gas into usable forms like ammonia, which then becomes ammonium or nitrate in the soil.
And plants prefer nitrate. NO3.
They generally take up nitrate most readily, yes. Then they convert it internally back to ammonium to build amino acids and other molecules.
And some plants have special relationships with these bacteria.
Oh, absolutely. The classic example Dr. Hoffman gave is legumes, peas, beans, soybeans. They form these structures called nodules on their roots, which are like custom-built houses for nitrogen-fixing bacteria. It's a super efficient symbiosis. The plant gets a direct nitrogen supply, the bacteria get sugars, and a safe place to live. It's why planting legumes is great for soil health.
That's fascinating. And it's not just bacteria. Plants partner with fungi, too. Mycorrhiza.
Fungus roots, literally. And yes, this partnership is nearly universal and absolutely vital. Dr. Hoffman described two main types. Ectomycorrhiza form a dense sheath or mat around the outside of the root tip.
Okay.
And then arbuscular mycorrhiza, which are arguably even more intimate, the fungal threads actually penetrate between the root cells, forming these highly branched tree-like structures called arbuscules.
Like little trees inside the root for more surface area.
Exactly. Massive increase in surface area for nutrient exchange, especially phosphorus. The fungus is way better at scavenging minerals from the soil than the root alone.
And Dr. Hoffman had that stark example about invasive species.
Yeah, how chemicals released by some invasive plants can kill off the native mycorrhizal fungi, which then devastates the native trees that depend on them, shows it's not optional, it's essential.
So the roots, with help from microbes, are absorbing water and minerals. But how does the plant control what actually gets into the main transport highway, the xylem?
Ah, the final checkpoint. That's the Casparian strip.
Right, this waterproof band. Where is it exactly?
Yeah. It's embedded in the cell walls of the endodermis, a layer of cells surrounding the central vascular cylinder in the root. Think of it as a ring, like a gasket. Its only job is to block water and solutes from moving through the apoplast, the cell walls at that point.
So it forces everything to take the transmembrane route.
Precisely. Everything has to cross a living cell membrane to enter the symplast before it can get into the xylem. This gives the plant selective control. It can regulate which minerals get in and keep potential toxins out. It's quality control.
Amazing layers of control. Beyond these core mechanics, Dr. Hoffman touched on some really specialized lifestyles, too.
Yeah, plants get creative, like parasitic plants. Mistletoe, for instance. It photosynthesizes a bit, but it taps its specialized roots right into the host tree's xylem and phloem to steal water and nutrients. Some parasites are completely non-green, total moochers.
And then the ones that turn the tables on animals. Carnivorous plants.
Right. Found in really nutrient-poor places, yeah. Like bogs where nitrogen is scarce. Pitcher plants? Venus fly traps. They trap insects and digest them, not for energy like we eat food, but specifically to supplement their mineral nutrition, getting that vital nitrogen and phosphorus.
Plants also have incredible ways to cope with harsh environments, especially lack of water.
Oh, definitely. Dr. Hoffman mentioned the ocotillo in the desert. It just drops all its leaves and goes dormant for most of the year to save water, then bursts into leaf when rain finally comes.
Smart. And the oleander.
Oleander leaves have their stomata, the little pores for gas exchange, hidden down in these sheltered pits on the underside of the leaf, called crypts, protects them from drying winds.
Reduces water loss. Makes sense.
And then something like the old man cactus, with all that dense white hair or spines, it's not just defense. It reflects sunlight, keeping the cactus cooler so it doesn't have to lose as much water through evaporation for cooling.
Wow. Okay, let's wrap up by circling back to the two big transport systems, xylem and phloem, and how they really work on a large scale. Xylem, first water up.
The key thing Dr. Hoffman stressed about xylem transport is that it's not a push from the roots. It's a pull from the top.
A pull. Driven by?
Evaporation. Water evaporating from the surfaces inside the leaves' transpiration creates negative pressure, like suction. This suction pulls the entire column of water up through the xylem vessels, and it works because water molecules stick together really tightly. That's cohesion.
And they stick to the xylem walls, too.
Right, that's adhesion. Cohesion and adhesion work together to maintain this continuous, albeit fragile, chain of water molecules being pulled upwards against gravity, sometimes hundreds of feet.
Incredible. So it's evaporation pulling, water sticking together, pulling the next molecule up.
You got it. As long as the chain doesn't break.
And the phloem. Moving the sugar around. How is that driven?
Phloem transport, or bulk flow, is driven by positive pressure differences, completely different from xylem. At the source, like a leaf, sugar, mainly sucrose, is actively loaded into the phloem cells, often using that proton pump and co-transporter system we talked about earlier.
Okay, loading sugar in.
This makes the phloem's sap at the source very concentrated, very sugary. High solute concentration means low water concentration. So water flows into the phloem from the nearby xylem via osmosis.
Ah, water follows the sugar.
Exactly. This influx of water creates high hydrostatic pressure, high water pressure at the source end of the phloem tube.
And at the sink end, where sugar is needed.
At the sink, like a root or fruit, the sugar is actively unloaded from the phloem and used or stored. This lowers the sugar concentration, so water flows out of the phloem, often back to the xylem, creating low pressure at the sink.
High pressure at the source, low pressure at the sink. So the sugary sap just flows down the pressure gradient.
Precisely. It's pushed by pressure from source to sink, bulk flow.
So wrapping this all up, what Dr. Hoffman showed us is this incredibly intricate world operating just beneath the surface.
Absolutely. It seems simple, a plant just sits there, but the chemistry and physics involved are staggering. That proton pump acting as the master energy converter, the reliance on bacteria for basic nutrients like nitrogen, the constant battle to get resources from the soil while desperately trying not to lose precious water to the air. It's a continuous balancing act.
And maybe a final thought to leave you with, something to really chew on from Dr. Hoffman's perspective. Think about the tallest trees, like the giant redwoods, hundreds of feet tall, every single water molecule needed way up at the very top. Leaves has to be pulled there, molecule by molecule, all the way from the roots.
And that entire massive feat of hydraulic engineering relies fundamentally on the microscopic action of proton pumps in root cells, setting up tiny electrical gradients.
The smallest details enabling the grandest scale of life. It really puts it in perspective, doesn't it?
It certainly does. The hidden world powering the green one we see.